Alrighty, well done with those names. I think just to be confident and just say it like you mean it. Okay, so strange passage, and I do want to give you the context for it in a moment as we think through, but just in case you're joining us for the first time, we're looking at the Old Testament names of God, and this is actually the last in our series on this. And we've gone through, I prayed a couple of them, through a couple of them a moment ago, but we said the Lord who is a shepherd, the Lord who heals, the Lord who provides. Gail, a couple of weeks ago, spoke on the Lord who sees me, the God who sees me, and we looked at, of course, Hagar. And so this morning, though, we've got a great one, and I'm going to put it up before I dare to announce it. Jehovah Mekodesh Kem. Which is the God who washes dishes. No, it's not. He's not the dishwasher God. He's the sanctifying God, Mekodeshkem. Now, just so you know, we've been on this journey of learning Hebrew over the next 10 years. You remember that? And Hebrew, like a lot of languages, you add bits to words to make them mean other things. So we do it in English. You do it in lots of languages. So we have the word possible. What do you add at the beginning of possible to change the meaning of possible? Unpossible. No, okay, impossible. Well done. Just trying to put you off. Impossible. And then we add things to the end of words, don't we? So possible, possibilities. Impossibilities. You can add things to both ends and it sort of has the same meaning, but it changes the meaning, doesn't it? It makes it able to be used in different places. So Mekodeshkem is actually from the word that is Kodash. So the phonetic spelling's up there for you, Kodash. And the definition is to be set apart, made holy or consecrated to make it, declare it sacred. And so just for a moment, we're going to use a lot of those words sort of interchangeably this morning. The idea of being consecrated or to be made holy or to be set apart. And the first time we see this word in the Old Testament is in Genesis 2, very early on, second chapter of the Bible. It says, and God blessed the seventh day and made it Kodash. He made it holy. He made it set apart. So you know the story, like God worked for 6 days and on the seventh day he rested. So it was different to the other days. So he did something different on that day. He consecrated it. He set it apart. He sanctified it. He made it holy. All those words relate, but it's the idea that it becomes something different. So we do that with different things, don't we? Hopefully you do it. Maybe with one day a week. It's a great opportunity and God encourages us to do it as he did with the seventh day. But it's where you use something differently to at other times. So you might actually be wearing your Sunday best that you would never wear any other day during the week. You may not be, but back in the old days, that's what we used to do. We used to put our Sunday best on and that was our holy, consecrated, set apart clothes for Sunday. Sometimes we've got special people coming over for dinner. What does Mum say? She says, set the table, but be very careful and use the good crockery, the consecrated, holy, set-apart crockery that if it breaks, oh, it's a bad thing. So it's not for common everyday use. Now, the interesting thing is you can have two things that are identical, and one is consecrated, so we actually have 7 days that are identical, but God says one of them is going to be consecrated. He actually made the world and made mankind, and mankind started to populate the earth, and so there's lots of people everywhere, but God actually takes one group of people, starts with one guy by the name of Abraham, picks him out and says, you are my holy people, my consecrated people, my set apart people, my people who are different from the others and yet not different. And so it's a strange sort of word. So, Kodash, the first time, though, it's used with regards to God and the God that makes us holy is in Genesis 31:13. So you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy, who is the one who makes you sacred and set apart rather than who you were. So, it's God, according to this, who makes us holy. But in these passages here, there seems to be a lot of people trying to consecrate people or consecrate things, make things holy. But let's have a look at the context of our passage for a moment. Are you ready? Now, the context of Chronicles. It's like the Chronicles of Narnia, but it's the Chronicles of Israel. And it goes through who certain kings are, and then it says whether, sort of gives a bit of a rough assessment of them. Do they follow God? Did they sacrifice to idols? Did they help lead the people towards God? Or did they help the people turn away from God? And then they died and they had a son, and their son did, and it goes through all these different kings. And so we get to a bunch of kings, some good, some bad. And then we get to King Ahaz, and he's not so good. He's not so good because he offers to idols, but he also guts the temple and closes the doors. So that's not what Israel's God was supposed to do. I said he guts the temples. If you have a look at the passage, the context is that he actually seems to remove the furniture, remove things from the temple. I think he had a side hustle going where, because, you know, you could sell these things off for a bit of money, I guess. I don't know. Maybe he wanted them in his bedroom or his house. But anyway, he guts the temple, he closes the door. And then his son, though, King Hezekiah, which is the king in the passage that we're looking at today, comes along and he opens and repairs the doors of the temple. He's a good king and he wants to lead the people back to God. And if you have a look at some of the verses leading up to this passage, you'll see this. He keeps saying to the people, come on, let's go back to God. He's really encouraging them to do that. He's reminding them, you are a consecrated, sacred people who've been set apart for God. Come back to God. And so he sets about calling the people back to God. And there's a whole lot of Kordashian happening. Kordash being making consecrated, making sacred. Not this lot. Nothing to do with them. It's Kordashian happening, not Kardashian. And so that's what's going on. Did you notice my little, see the my guy there with his limp, with his walking stick? When the Kardashians come up, he goes the other way. He turns his back on them. Anyway, just little subtle things. Anyway, if you see anything else small and subtle through the talk, let me know on the screen. Okay, so that's the context of the passage. So does that help make a little bit more sense of where we're up to? Because what happens now, if you go to the very beginning of chapter 30, the heading in your NIV is Hezekiah celebrates the Passover. We're doing the New Testament version of the Passover. It's what Jesus does with the Passover, with the Last Supper. We're going to do that this morning. But Hezekiah celebrates the Passover. He says to the people, come on, let's do the Passover together. Now the Passover, do you know how long the Passover festival went for? How many days? 7. Well done. It went for 7 days. And here in this passage, the people start, they're sort of going, yeah, this God thing's great. We're back with God. And so do you know they do the 7-day Passover, and do you know what they do at the end of the 7 days? They say, let's do another 7 days. They did 14 days. They're just going off. So that's what happens. That's the context. And so in the midst of all that, there is a problem. See, what happens if you're managing God's people really, really well, what you would do is you'd be consecrating as you go along. Do you know what I mean? You'd make sure that your priests were consecrated and ready to do what priests do. And those priests would make sure that there are people who are ready and set apart to kill Passover lambs when Passover lambs need to be killed. There'd be somebody who's going about the job of consecrating Passover lambs to make sure they're consecrated. Everything's holy and set apart. It takes time. But there's a bit of a problem with this because the people had walked away from God and they'd stopped consecrating things and setting them apart for God. And so Hezekiah says, come on, let's do the Passover. Yeah, let's go for it. And there's a bit of a problem. That's the problem that we get in this passage, that there's not enough priests, there's not enough consecrated lambs, there's a bit of a problem. And so, what do the people do? Well, let's have a bit of a look. All this Kordashian that's happening is, we see it in verses through, so I've just picked out some of the verses in the passage for you. They slaughtered the Passover lamb. The priests and Levites were ashamed and they consecrated themselves. They had not set themselves apart and they were ashamed about that, so they did that. The priests sprinkled the blood and many had not consecrated themselves, it says. And so the people weren't consecrated. And then so as a result, because they weren't, the Levites had to kill the Passover lambs for them. And because they could not consecrate their lambs themselves. Notice how many times this word consecrate or holy or sanctify comes into the passage. Although most who came had not purified themselves, yet they ate the Passover contrary to what was written. Now we have a moment of tension that has built up, which may or may not worry you. Chances are it probably doesn't, but it did for them back then. In all of this effort to have the Passover meal, to have a share in a meal that, as a consecrated holy people set apart for God, was a meal that recognized that they were holy and set apart. And it was a meal that was holy and set apart, with a lamb that was holy and set apart. That they came and there was not enough holy set apart things. And so what do? It's important. It's all the way through the Old Testament. To be consecrated, you need to do it by the book. You need to do it the way God says. And probably a more helpful way of looking at it is you need to step into God's way of sanctification. You don't just make these things up as you go along. And there's a problem. They'd eaten the Passover contrary to what was written. But Hezekiah is a good king. And he's a good king who's leading the people back to God. And so look at what Hezekiah prays about this situation of unconsecrated people eating this consecrated Passover lamb. He says, Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, "May the Lord, who is good, pardon everyone who sets his heart on seeking God, the Lord, the God of our fathers, even if he is not clean, according to the rules of the sanctuary." Hezekiah is aware, I think, that there is something deeper going on. The Passover lamb is a symbol, isn't it? Who's the real Passover lamb? We've been through this. Jesus. Well done. I'm sure the kids would have got that. It's Jesus. Be more confident next time, guys. It's Jesus. It usually is Jesus. Okay. It's a symbol. And so Hezekiah is just aware that all this ceremony points to a reality, but the reality is actually what's most important, isn't it? What's the purpose of consecrating, setting aside things, setting aside lambs, going through a ceremony that consecrates, makes you holy, sets you apart? I think that at the very heart of it is the reality, the truth that it's pointing to, is that you have been set apart because your heart is seeking the one who created you. You only have eyes for him. That's what it means with regards to our heart. The heart is our seat of our affection. If your heart seeks something, then it's sort of like, it's really saying, well, that's, you know, it's where you put your time, your energy. It's where your focus goes. It's where your heart has gone. And so Hezekiah says, "May the Lord, who is good, pardon everyone who sets his heart on seeking God, the Lord, the God of our fathers." That's what's important. By seeking God with their hearts, they were actually being set apart. Now, that takes a bit to get your head around, but hopefully we'll look at a bit more and we'll see if that helps. But just for the moment, by seeking God with their hearts, they were actually being set apart. And so we hear the very last bit of our passage. There's a big sigh of relief because instead of everybody being struck down because they didn't follow the rules properly, God actually, I think, agrees with Hezekiah, or at least the heart of Hezekiah's prayer, that this is about whether or not people are actually genuinely seeking him. And it says, "And the Lord heard Hezekiah." And do you remember the word last week? Rephor. It's the Hebrew word for heal. He is the God who heals. And so the Lord heard Hezekiah, and he heals the people. In verse 20, they're healed, they're made whole again. And so we actually have 2 weeks. Last week we looked at the God who heals. This week we're looking at the God who sanctifies. And in this passage this morning, we actually have both those words. These people are trying to be consecrated, holy, sanctified. And in the process, we're told they are healed. And so just for a moment, I want to see if we can follow this through and think about those two things for a moment, because there's two words, both applying to God, and they're both things he does. He heals and he sanctifies. I want to explain, I guess, a couple of things, and I hope this is helpful for you, but we'll see. And if it's a little bit confusing for the moment, hopefully it's going to become much clearer for you in a moment. There is a purpose and a reason behind this. God heals. God sanctifies. The two things are closely connected, but they are different. And yet we use the word interchangeably at times, those two words. Sometimes we can be using the word healing and sanctification and mean different things. And sometimes we use those two words and we mean the same thing. The bottom line is they are different things, but they often have so much overlap that it's not easy to see the difference. But I'll give you this, and I'll give you this not because it helps so much, but I just thought it was cool. To be healed is to be made whole, whereas to be sanctified is to be made holy. Doesn't help you really, does it? But it's cool, isn't it? To be whole and holy. Okay, just me. Just if you want to be a donut, that's what you've got to do. Okay, so there's this idea of these two different things, being whole, being holy. Let me explain it maybe a slightly different way. In the New Testament, Jesus healed, didn't he? But Jesus also did more than that. Jesus also was a part of people being sanctified and made holy as well. And there's some stories where we get a picture of this. I actually started by talking about John 13 and Peter and having his feet washed. And Peter says, hey, I don't need you to wash my feet. And Jesus says, well, you need to wash my feet because that's a part of being a part of me. And he says, well, wash all of me. Give me a full bath. And he says, no, you don't need a full bath. You've already had the bath. You've already had something that's made you whole. But you do need this, which is something that is a part of a process that continues. And maybe that's partly the difference between healing and sanctification. But there's another story. Jesus finds 10 lepers. Do you know this story? There's 10 lepers. They've all got leprosy. And it says, as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They say, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. And Jesus says, all right then. Head off to the temple, get yourselves cleansed. And on the way to the temple, it says they were cleansed. Now, one of them, when he saw he was healed, he came back, praising God in a loud voice. He throws himself at Jesus' feet. He thanks him. And it says that he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asks, well, weren't there 10 who were cleansed? Where are the other 9? And they hadn't come back. And so Jesus says to the one who did come back, rise and go, your faith has saved you. Now just for a moment, I've underlined some words, haven't I? They're cleansed, they're healed. They're made whole again with regards to their leprosy. But notice only one of them seems to set himself apart for Jesus. Did you notice how he does that? He comes back praising God in a loud voice. He throws himself at Jesus' feet. His heart is now directed at seeking Jesus with all of who he is. The other guys, all 10 of them had been healed, but one of them enters into something that is different, which goes sort of beyond healing in a way. And it's setting apart because of what we see happening in him. There's a change in him, isn't there? The other 9 lepers, we don't see the change if there is one. And we don't want to judge them too harshly, not really knowing what's going on for them. But it's a good story for the purpose of highlighting that there can be a difference. Sometimes God heals us. As we looked at last week, it leaves us with a limp sometimes. And I do wonder whether the limp and sanctification often go hand in hand. We looked at the fact last week that when you have a limp, it's a way that God keeps you centered and honest and humble as a part of changing you as an ongoing process. That's sanctification. Sanctification is the idea of being made holy. Sometimes when we put our faith and trust in Jesus for the first time, it doesn't actually cause us to be a completely different person. Sometimes it happens really quickly. Sometimes there's much more of a process and a change that we have traditionally in the church called sanctification. So just to hopefully explain this, and hopefully it's getting clearer. 10 lepers are healed. In Jesus, you're made whole. They were made whole. By his wounds, you are healed. You are forgiven. So to go to the gospel for a moment, and maybe this is what Jesus is saying with Peter and the two things, the whole bath as opposed to the feet washing, is that through what Jesus has done, through his blood on a cross, through what he has done, we're somehow made whole, we're forgiven, We can enter into a relationship with the Father. Our brokenness is overcome, but there is still change that needs to occur. There is still a limp. Maybe there's something deeper, something more. We have one leper who is sanctified, perhaps, to be set apart for God's special use and purpose. And over time, truth and grace might work in his life to change him. Really struck by a quote by Peter Scazzera. I think it's one of my favorite quotes. He says, "A genuine relationship with God results in mercy that makes us softer towards others, not a morality that makes us harder and superior." I think I've quoted that to you before. That's sanctification, this idea that there is a process that changes us to be more like him. That's not just healing. That's not being somebody who was okay and then sick and then being made okay again. This is somebody who's being transformed and changed, being sanctified. And so Peter Scazzera challenges us as we look at ourselves, perhaps, encourages us maybe. You may have been healed. You may have been saved. You may be in relationship with God the Father and with his Son. You may be filled with the Holy Spirit. But there's more to come. There's a process of change, of being made holy. Peter Scazzera pointed out to me, I'm reading a book of his at the moment, in a way that I'd never seen it before, the way this happens in the Apostle Paul's life. Let me share it with you. I'm going to give you four things that Paul says at different parts of his walk with God. And the first one is when he is... and it's from Galatians, is when he was only 14 years old as a Christian. He'd only been a Christian for 14 years, and he's talking about some of the other apostles, and he says, "As for those who were held in high esteem, whatever they were makes no difference to me." So there's some humility there. He doesn't want to engage with a competition with other apostles and stuff. He's basically saying, you know, that's them over there. I'm just me. I'll do me. They do them. He's sort of, you know, he's not going to engage with that. That's good. That's nice and healthy. I like that. But when he's a Christian for 20 years, listen to this. He says, "I am the least of the apostles." So before it was like, I'm not going to be in a competition with them. Now, at 20 years of age, 6 years later, he says, "Let's make a competition out of it. I'm the least of them." Can you see what he's done? He's actually grown. He's grown in that kingdom where the first become last and the last become first. But look at how he continues to change. At 25 years of age as a Christian, he says, "I am less than the least of all of the Lord's people." It's like, forget about whether I'm an apostle or not. When it comes to all of God's people, I'm down here, I'm sorry. And then have a look at where he's at in 1 Timothy 1 at 30 years of age. He basically says, "I'm the worst human being there is." That's the process of sanctification. When you become more humble, when you place yourself where Jesus placed himself. Because what did Jesus do? He hung on a cross for all the people who didn't deserve it. He hung on a cross. He made himself less than everybody. Paul's actually gone through the process of being sanctified. And don't get me wrong, it's not over yet. It nearly is at that point over for Paul. He doesn't have long after that. Jesus amazingly goes to the cross for you and for me, places himself at the very, very bottom when he's only in his early 30s, much younger than Paul is as a man here who's been a Christian for 30 years. But been alive much longer. Can you see the difference between sanctification and healing? Can you also see that this is something that God does in us? This is not just a ceremony that we do to sanctify a lamb so that we can eat it. There's much more going on here. Which is why I think our passage today, and I hope the passage is helpful in some way, Hezekiah prayed for them saying, "May the Lord, who is good, pardon everyone who sets his heart on seeking God." That's the key to sanctification. It's to walk with him. It's to be shoulder to shoulder with Him each and every day. Because when we have an encounter with the risen Lord, it doesn't leave us the way we were. It may not take our limp away. Indeed, walking with Jesus with our limp might help us to lean more on Him and have less reliance on ourselves. So, spending time journeying with Jesus, seeking our God and our Savior with all of our hearts, that's how we enter into this process that God does in us. And so I have a question this morning. Are you engaged intentionally on that journey? Paul was. It wasn't something that happened accidentally. He spent time each day, silence, solitude, reading scripture, praying, sitting with his Lord and Savior, speaking to Him, bringing things to Him. Even his limp, as he said, well, I've got this thorn in the flesh, and he asked for it to be removed, and Jesus said to him, no, my grace is sufficient. I haven't finished sanctifying you yet. I think while you've got that thorn in the flesh, it's really helping you, Paul, see where you need to put yourself in regards to everybody else. It's helping you put yourself more and more last. So I'd like to give you something to do, and I've given you a lot to think about this morning, and in some ways I was probably asking you to use your brains more than I usually do, and I apologize for that. But I want to encourage you, don't let your limp, or indeed our corporate limp, put you off. You see, that's what it's so tempting to do, isn't it? In fact, what is our prayer point usually when it comes to limps, things that, you know, we do what Paul did. We ask that God would just remove it from us. What did God say to Paul? He said, no, my grace is sufficient for you. And the unspoken bit is, and there's something that I've got for you in all of this, Paul. I haven't finished with you yet. So you're being made holy. You're being made set apart. You're being sanctified. And so with your limp and with your challenges that you might have in life, don't be put off by that, because God is faithful. He's at work. He's keeping you centered and humbled and honest. It does help sometimes if you're a journaler, for example, to maybe write down some of those things and also write next to them to remind you that God has those things in hand. I love James. He reminds us to draw near to Him, and He will draw near to us. That's a part of the sanctification process, is walking closer and closer to Him. But there's other things you can do as well. What are you reading this week? I always find that when I'm reading, especially good Christian authors that challenge me about who I am and encourage me to learn and grow, is helpful. I'd encourage you to be reading scripture as well as you do that. But also, what about you and what you're working on with you? Do you know? I remember once that apparently they reckon when you go see a psychologist, it's really good to sit down with a psychologist and have a chat about what it is that you're working on and why. Where are you moving in the whole process of seeing a psychologist? And I think with God, with the process of sanctification, it's helpful to be thoughtful and purposeful. What is it that I need working on? How is God helping me with this? What do I need to do to step into His process of sanctification in my life? How is He involved? How are His people involved? And that's probably my last point. We talked about it a little last week, this idea of a healing God, and how this is something for us to think about, not just individually, but corporately. And I think this is as well. Our process of sanctification is easier when we're walking alongside other people who are being sanctified too. That we're doing it together and we're encouraging each other in that journey. So I want you to think about some of those things and what it is that you might be able to do this week as you spend time with Him.